You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, where are precious metals prices heading? That's the question on everybody's mind. And will it have any effect on the junior mining sector? So let's talk with David Earfley, head of JuniorMinerJunkie.com. And David, it's always great to have you on the show. So what's your take on what's happening with the gold market now? We thought we were headed for the promised land and our dreams were cut short as usual.
Yeah, always great to see you, Gary. Thanks again for having me on. It's back to more frustration in this sector, but it's really not surprising. When you look at the big picture, what has happened in the past, what is currently happening now, and what will likely happen in the future. I mean, you had a gold price go up $350 in the space of 3 months after a false breakdown. A 50% retracement of that $350 move would be around $1,800. So there's really strong support in 1780, 1800. And as far as the stocks are concerned, we never had any general investment participation in the sector. If you take a look at the volume that accompanied that move, we had a 55% move in about 4 months in the stocks. So a 50% retracement of that is going to be, is going to be about 25-30% move down. So and that's taking place now at even lower volume. I really don't care about this sector volume going on right now in a lot of these stocks, but the wise juniors did the right thing, and the ones that needed money cashed up on the pop. So we did have capital markets open up. We've had M&A heat up now. That's very encouraging for the sector. Merger mining Mondays are back. Even this Tuesday, we had a holiday on Monday, and we had a couple of more merger announcements. So it's nice to see that sector heating up as we get into conference season here. The BMO conference in your neck of the woods is starting next week, and then right after that is going to be PDAC, and they're going to be talking mergers and acquisitions because these companies need to replace these ounces. So these stocks are on sale. I see the same thing happening in the mining sector that is happening in the gold space. The gold space, you're seeing ETFs being sold by retail investors, and you're seeing central bank buying coming in and buying what they're selling. I mean, central banks have bought more gold than they have in the past 55 years. So they see what's coming. They see the recession. They see what the U.S. and the West did to Russia, taking them off the Swiss system. And anybody who's even remotely aligned with Russia sees that, hey, I better get rid of my dollars and maybe get some gold here. And that's what a lot of these companies are doing. And if the ETFs, the retail sector, they keep selling the gold and the central banks are buying it. So you're kind of seeing the same thing in the mining sector where you're seeing investors continuing to sell their gold stocks, and the majors are saying, hey, well, let's take advantage of this opportunity and see if we can acquire some of these companies on the cheap. Some of these deal announcements have been opportunistic, while others have made sense in a major minor merger sense.
So if I could sum it up, basically you see two forces driving the sector forward. Number one is M&A, and we've seen some pretty impressive mergers acquisition activity with Newmont and et cetera. So we've seen an uptick there. And then a return to gold due to the disruption of the global economic system, i.e. removing Russia from SWIFT, that's led to uncertainty and instability in the system. So therefore, countries reaffirming their attunement or affinity for gold reserves, which hasn't exactly been in vogue the past 70, 80 years, really not since the Great Depression in the U.S. and World War II, has anybody cared anything about gold. So this rediscovery of gold, especially as a tier one asset for the Bank for International Settlements, all of that is kind of moving this forward.
Absolutely. And all while it's knocking on the door of $2,000 gold, which has been strong resistance for 12 years. I mean, it reminds me an awful lot of what took place at $500 gold and then what took place at $1,000. $500 gold, you know, gold hit $500 around in the early 1990s. And it consolidated below $500 until the turn of the century. And then when it finally broke out above 500 in 2003, I think it was, you know, that's when I got excited about the sector. When I discovered the sector, you know, I was looking for a sector that was going up while everything was going down. I'm like, hey, here's the gold sector. And it got me into the financial system and it got me hooked on this sector. And, my story, I ended up selling my house and putting all the proceeds into juniors. And when I did that, it was around 2005, and it was right before the gold price blew past $500 an ounce. So the gold miners were consolidating for 2 years before that took place, because we had a huge move in the miners, right? The miners were in a bear market before that for quite a long time. So right. We had a huge move, you know, out of the bottom at the turn of the century. And then in 2003, they started to consolidate that move. And I saw this and I said, okay, this is a great time to sell my house, because real estate has blown up to massive proportions in the U.S. You know, I'm sitting on all these capital gains. So why not, you know, attempt to change my life and put all this money into juniors? And fortunately, it worked out for me, because the gold price doubled in the next couple of years. And then, you know, we had the same thing happen at $1,000, right? Gold touched $1,000 once, and then, but it only consolidated for about a year. Below 1,000, because we had the global financial crisis in 2008, which took the gold price down to about a little over $600, right? And then, you know, gold knocked on that $1,000 door three times. Fourth knock, it broke, and then gold tripled from that $600 low in a couple of years.
Right.
Fast forward to what's happening now. You know, we had the first knock at $2,000 gold in 2020. You know, second and third knocks were last year. And a fourth knock is going to happen after this, I believe, is going to happen after this consolidation takes place. The only question is, where's this consolidation going to, you know, where's this correction going to end after this $350 move? And I firmly believe that 700, 1780, 1800 gold is really strong support. Sure, could it go down to 1750? Absolutely. But if you take a look at the shares, you know, we still got generalist investor interest.
Right.
And I don't think that's going to take place until the market starts to price in a $2,000 gold floor, as opposed to a 12-year $2,000 gold ceiling.
Gotcha. Well, it makes sense. You do make a compelling case. And so how do you prepare yourself for this eventuality? Where's the best place to be? Obviously, your Newmonts and, Barricks, they're going to take off first. But then the rest of the party brings along the mid-tiers, the mid-tier producers, and then, of course, the explorers, the discoverers. Is that going to be the pattern?
Well, actually, it's the royalty companies. The royalty companies and the streamers have already taken off.
That's right.
Look at their charts. You take a look at Franco-Nevada, Royal Gold, Wheaton Precious Metals. You know, their charts still look very healthy, and they continue to move upwards. But if you take a look at the majors, we're starting to see more consolidation in those majors, because they're taking advantage of what's happening here. Like Newmont is taking advantage of the situation in Newcrest, and them, you know, hiring a new CEO. And basically, you know, they're very familiar with Newcrest anyway. Newcrest is the sixth largest gold miner in the world, because Newcrest was spun off of Newmont 30 years ago. And all the while, you've got Barrick Gold watching all this. You know, Mark Bristow, who's got a pretty big ego, and Barrick Gold was the top dog for quite a long time, until Newmont took over Goldcorp a few years ago, and they became the number one gold producer. Well, if this Newmont Newcrest deal goes through, they'll be in a league by themselves because they'll be producing almost twice as much gold as the number two producer now, and that is Barrick. So you know, I'm sure he's sitting back saying, hey, you know, I'm going to have to grow my
being left out.
So, you know, and then this week we had it, recently we, after that merger announcement was, after that merger proposed deal was announced, then it shifted down to the mid-tiers, you know, when you had B2 Gold making an opportunistic deal with a Sabina to take over that company. I said opportunistic. Clive Johnson's a pretty smart guy. Because I see the only other suitor for Sabina being Agnico Eagle, because basically they're the only major miner really that has proved that they can mine successfully in Nunavut. You know, TMAC was attempted to be taken over by a Chinese company, and the government nixed that, and then Agnico ended up taking it over. So everyone assumed, myself included, that Agnico would be the company that would eventually take out Sabina. Well, they're tied in now with the Yamana merger. As soon as the shareholders, Agnico shareholders approve Agnico taking over Yamana's Canadian assets, Clive Johnson swooped in for a bid with Sabina, thinking, hey, you know, I'm sure thinking that Agnico's tied up with a Yamana deal, so they're not going to try to outbid me. And also for B2, I mean that diversifies their jurisdictional risk. You know, all their operations are in tier two jurisdictions, and none of it's a top tier jurisdiction. And they also have experience mining in that climate, because when they were Bema Gold, they had a couple of mines in Russia. So these guys are planning these strategic M&As. I expect to see more of these deals take place, opportunistic deals. You know, we had all on the heels of that, we had ATAC attempts to be taken over by Victoria. They nixed that. And then this week, Hecla swooped in with a better deal and also sweetened it with, hey, you can spin out your copper assets, you guys can still have jobs, and we're also getting a better deal for your shareholders. So this deal I expect to go through. It's going to get really interesting after these conferences, I think, Warren.
Well, and then these companies get a lot bigger, and they're going to have produce more ounces, and they're going to need even more reserves to replace what they're using, right?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Gold Terra Resource Corp is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Gold Terra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project, with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Gold Terra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Gold Terra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
And right, and because they got to attract these generalist investors that have been out of this sector for the past decade. They left in 2013 and they haven't come back.
Exactly. So this is coming to a head. In other words, this whole frustration cycle, and I would just call it multiple cycles of frustration going from, really back to 2012, but fast forward to 2016 and then to 2019, and 20, the COVID years. And and now apparently we're free of that, and the direction is starting to become apparent.
Right, and gold stocks in relation to the gold price haven't been this cheap in 7 years. The last 7 year gold stock cycle low, which was late 2015. Gold stocks bottom every 7 years. All right, 2001 we had the Gordon Brown double bottom in the gold price. Gold stocks bottomed in 2001. 2008, we had the global financial crisis. Everybody sold everything to buy dollars. Miners bottomed in 2008. Seven years later, late 2015, after the bear market, we saw GDX, GXJ, go down 85%. We had a major bottom there. So now fast forward another 7 years, we had a major low, major bottom in September of last year, where we had massive capitulation from the summer of 2022 into a vicious tax loss selling season late last year, where everybody that was going to sell sold. And basically I see the worst case scenario. There's a couple of gaps on the GDX and GDXJ that could fill that are higher than the major low, struck in late September. I think that's a possibility that those could fill, but they're not too much lower from where those are right now. But right now, if you're talking right, you're talking in the near term, you know, GDX, GDXJ, HUI, they're all extreme oversold. HUI has gone down, 13 out of the last 14 sessions, last 10 consecutive sessions. The RSI on the daily HUI is at 27. So we're going to have a bounce here very soon. But I expect that bounce will likely be sold in a couple of weeks. You know, we got PDAC coming up. We got PDAC curse. We got, which usually happens, you know, when we have all these miners get together and we have a mining sell-off. So it's all setting up where that may take place. But, you know, personally, you know, I did all my buying late last year for myself and my subscribers. And I'm very happy with all of the companies that I own, that I cover for my subscribers. And I don't see a lot of selling taking place with big volume in any of these companies. I see really weak volume. Like I said, I don't care about the sector volume taking place right now. So, you know, if you're not on margin, you just need a little more patience because, you know, we're really close to this thing breaking out above $2,000. And, you know when it'll happen? It'll happen when all of us least expect.
Yeah.
That's the way this sector works, right?
The rising tide.
He was expecting a big breakdown when gold got below 1675, right? Everybody was saying, okay, this is it. This is the breakdown. Gold's going to $1,500, right? Well, it was basically a bear trap, a huge bear trap. And the gold price whipped around in the other direction. It went up $350 in the space of 3 months while everybody was expecting it to go down to 1500. So,
interesting.
Yeah, that's just the way this sector works. It tries to get everybody out of the boat before it takes off in both directions. So we had the bear side of the boat overloaded. Boom, it got down to 1620. Yeah, so it reversed, it went the other way. You know, the same thing happens, when the gold price tried to climb to $2,000 during the parabolic blow off in 2011. Everybody was saying, gold's going to 2000. Gold's going to 2000. It got to 1925. And then we ushered in a vicious bear market.
I knew it wouldn't. I absolutely knew it would. It wouldn't.
Yes.
I just watched the price action, and the higher it got, the weaker it got.
The more parabolic it got, the higher it got. Yep. Silver going to $50, blowing off. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So the day is coming, but not quite yet, but sooner rather than later, if I could sum it up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm thinking summer. You know, because, you know, we have this debt ceiling situation that's coming to a head. The last time we had a debt ceiling situation come to a major head was, guess when? It late 2011. Yeah. It took the gold price nearly to $2,000 an ounce. I mean, this thing is really bad. Global debt, U.S. global debt's over $300 billion. U.S. debt is now 31.5. Just the interest alone, which is already 70% of that 31.5, the interest alone, when the Fed raises to 5%, next month is going to be $1.2 trillion, just the interest. So,
talking some real money there.
Exactly. You know, and people are hurt. You know, the inflation's not going away. And, the stock market's starting to roll over again this week. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how the gold price reacts to everything that's going on. We got geopolitical tensions heating up yet again. Biden and Putin kind of sparring, you know, with their two separate speeches this week. You know, Putin and Russia backing out of uranium treaty, nuclear weapons agreement.
Yeah.
And, you know, relations getting heated with China and the U.S. over Taiwan again. You know, all this, you know, there's so many things out there that can pop the gold price. So many things that we don't want to happen that could pop. But
a lot of black swans. circling the stock market for sure, and the economy and the world capital is geopolitical. Well, I think you've given us a good overview. So go over to Junior Miner Junkie, and that's with a Y.com, and sign up for it. We're subscribers, and I love getting your Friday missives and your Kitco articles, David. Find them invaluable. And it just could be coming very soon. I mean, the only surprise to me, David, I don't know about how you feel, is that it hasn't come sooner with all the global instability and insanity and supply chains. And you go down the list of commodity inflation,
yep,
and everything else. The only surprise is, why hasn't it happened sooner?
Yep. Well, gold always does what it should, but never what we expect. You know, I learned that from my dearly departed friend and mentor, Richard Russell, years ago.
Sure.
You know, I mean, this is, you know, it's inflate or die with the Fed, and gold always does what it's supposed to do, but never when. And we just don't know when it's going to happen, but we know it will happen. We want to make sure that we're positioned when it does happen. And as long as you're not on margin, you know, you're investing money and you're accumulating shares that you could afford to lose. But
yeah, it's money most importantly
that you want to grow, and you put it in a basket of companies that you've researched to the nines. And that's the great thing about what's happening. All this time to do all this research and make sure you get into the right companies to hold, because it's still a stock picker's market. You know, it's not going to be a dart thrower's market until the gold price goes above $2,000 and stays there. But you want to be holding the right company.
Absolutely. And I would just add to what you said inflate or die. I would say inflate and or die.
That's what's come to now. It's basically, I mean, the system is breaking down. The Keynesian socialistic system is breaking down. Well, I mean, global debt of over $300 trillion that governments have no intention or no possibility of paying down.
They can't pay it. And David, I've got a couple of years on you. I've been waiting for this since I discovered Mises and Austrian economics in the dank corner of the library at Pace University back in, God, I hate to date myself here, but around 78 or 9. And
I was 15. You
know, I knew it was coming ever since then. And here we are, getting closer by the day. Well, hey, appreciate you coming on, JuniorMinerJunkie.com. Got a question for David? Shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Make sure you sign up for your free newsletter. David, I always look forward to our discussions here, and you always give me something to think about. I hope you guys out there are thinking too. Are you buying mining stocks? Are you invested in the sector? Do you plan to? Put some comments down on the YouTube channel below and send us your thoughts. And David, we'll talk to you again real soon.
I look forward to it, Carrie. Always great talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.